Hi, and welcome to Five Compelling Questions with Sean. This is the podcast where we talk with writers about writing. And I'm thrilled today to have my guest, Sharon Lynn. How you doing, Sharon?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, Sean.
It's nice for you to be here. I'm so happy that you are. And I love your books. I get to edit them, so it's always fun to spend time with you and your characters. I don't spend a lot of time with you physically in person, but I get to spend time with you mentally with your books. So I'm happy that you're here. I'm going to give you a brief intro. Sharon Lynn, and there's a bunch of Sharon Lynn. So this is the Sharon Lynn. Sharon Lynn was raised in Arizona, but it was living in England as a teenager and every return trip since that inspired the setting of her Cotswold Crimes mystery series. As a theater, film, and writing professor, she coaches and mentors aspiring artists, which is, you can never get better than a teacher. I've said that 100 times on my show. Her short stories are in anthologies from Alice Domestic and Desert Sleuths. She's a member of the Mystery Writers of America, Sitches in Crime, and the International Thriller Writers. You should join Crime Writers Association in the UK. You should get into that one because that's you're a UK person. I was because that's like those are mine, and then I always have the CWA at the end. And we are
Oh,
here
yeah.
today. Yeah, you should do. You should. It's cool. You should join them. They're big fans of ours, and we have a lot of Brit authors, and they're also members. About the book, we're going to talk today about your most recent, which is Death Takes a Fall. So welcome to the show once again. Tell us about Death Takes a Fall.
Okay, well, again, thank you for having me. And Death Takes a Fall is book two in the Cotswold Crimes mystery series, and it finds our intrepid heroine, who is a college sophomore, sort of tumbling off of a cliff. The Cotswolds are a lot steeper than you might think. I've hiked them, and it was certainly a lot steeper than I thought. So Maddie, who is a college sophomore, as I said, kind of tumbles off a cliff and into a dead naked girl, and she's so upset by this, and she just wants to make sure that this girl is identified and remembered, and just that gets her into so much trouble.
Yeah, as it would. It's, stumbling across a lot of, it's a series, so she stumbles into things 2 times at least now, and probably up to 6 times, I'm guessing, since we have.
The contract was extended to 6 books. I was really excited about that.
That's the series thing. You have to keep it like totally like, oh yeah, well, she just it's a series, so she's gonna run into a lot of trouble down the road, but that's cool. So that's what the books are for. So number one, how did you choose? We talked about your love of England. But how did you choose this specific setting for your books? Why this area of all areas in England or anywhere?
Well, again, I did live, I was lucky enough to live my whole family actually in the city of Bath, which is a lovely little city, and it is kind of timeless. If you've ever seen Downton Abbey or anything with a Regency setting, you've seen Bath because they're all filmed there in some part of there. And so it is just this beautiful little city, and it tends to remain the same because it can't expand because of the hills around it. They're not safe to build on. So it's kind of like a little time capsule of a city, and it was built on top of Roman baths. So it was actually established in 44 AD, and they had lost that until like the middle of the 1800s when some plumber found Roman ruins. And so it's just got this wonderful, incredible, fascinating history on so many different levels, and it's beautiful, and it feels like home to me. So I really like writing about that. And as far as the Cotswolds go, it's this limestone that runs from Bath all the way up to like Stratford-on-Avon, and it's what all of Bath is built out of, that beautiful butter-colored limestone. And so rather than just killing a whole bunch of people in Bath, which is one of the safest cities on earth, I decided to kill a bunch of people along the Cotswolds Way. So
Yeah,
I can understand the dead bodies that never happen in these areas.
you got a diverse. Those Americans coming over here and making it seem like we're Detroit or something. Okay. So, number two, good answer. Number two, what is the most challenging part of the creative writing process for you? What do you find the hardest, and then what do you find the easiest? I have a guess, but I want to know what you think is what is the most difficult thing when you're getting going, writing during the writing process.
During the writing process, I am a plotter. I need to know what happens next. And if I don't have that, I just kind of stare at the screen. So I do plot everything out, but I'm also willing to listen to my characters when they say, no, I don't want to do that. And so I can take it a different direction. But as far as the writing process goes, because I plot first, sometimes my characters are a little robotic during my first drafts. And for example, I have Constable Bailey, who is featured in the series as sort of a love interest for Maddie. And my original description of Edward was that he was hot, you know, just he was a good looking guy. And that was all I had. And he was incredibly boring. And so, and I have a pre-editor, which you should be very thankful for, because she fixes a lot of things before I give it to you. And she's like, this is the most boring character. I don't know why anybody would like him. And so I just went through and I did a whole character bio for him. And I discovered so many fascinating things about him. When I went through that process, he just kind of told me, it's like, oh, I was involved in this and this. And all of that actually comes out in Death Takes a Fall. So we learn a lot about Edward's past and his secrets. But yeah, I do have a problem because I have plot and mystery all planned out. Sometimes my characters are just a little robotic. And so I have to give it to lots of people and say, does this sound okay? Does this sound okay?
Well, it's good that you recognize that, and then you have a system. You know, you have the system to infuse some life into them. That's good.
Yeah, and I teach character development. You'd think I would know better, but which is one of the reasons why I had a character bio sheet just handy, is because I make my students do it. So, yeah, it is very handy.
They're gonna listen to this and be like, hey. They're going to laugh at you pretty soon.
And I think one of the easier things for me is character voice. One of the other things I teach is script writing. And when you write characters in a script, you have very few descriptions because you can't be inside the character's head. And so you have to be able to identify the character from just the written word on the page. And because I kind of like harp on my students about that, it's like, no, this character says that, and this character says that, and this character says that, and they can't all say that same phrase. It's boring. Because of that, I tend to really kind of laser focus on my dialogue. And I think that makes my dialogue fun.
I think so too. And that's a really good point. And a lot of times when I'm doing a dev edit on a manuscript, I read them on my Kindle because then I'm not tempted to sort of insert notes and stuff, type notes with my finger. But I will just start highlighting the similar phrase or word that they get. Like, this word is unusual enough that we don't need to say it five times, because it starts to jump out at you like, oh, this is their favorite word. They're just going to use it in every scenario. But you don't realize it.
That is another one of those difficulties. I will fall in love with a word, you know, commanded, and it's five times in one chapter and not anywhere in the rest of the novel.
For a long time, like in my 20s, I was fixated on the word pedestrian. I'm like, I thought it was like the coolest word to say about like whatever, like, oh, this food is very pedestrian. I'm like, I have to stop saying that. It's like once a month is enough times. It becomes like a weird, it becomes like a tick, and it's weird. So that's good that you do that. So you're a plotter, we've determined. Next question. How do you manage writing a series as far as character arc, story arc development? So are you like, you know, you have so many books ahead now, so are you stretching some stuff out, or do you just go individually? Because you have to also consider, some of my pickup book four and start from there. So how do you manage all of that?
And again, this I think comes from teaching, and especially script writing is the stories have to have an end. It makes people happy to have an end. So you don't want to end on a cliffhanger because you want somebody to read the next book. You want somebody to read the next book because they so loved the first one, and they'll love the first one if it has an ending. And so I really feel like every book needs to be self-contained, but as far as Maddie's character arc, I do want her to grow and change because the series that I really like are the ones where, the character has learned something and has actually matured enough to be in a relationship and has moved forward with, various different things. And the series that I tend to get tired of are those, amateur sleuths that just are like they make the same mistake over and over and over again. And I just, no matter how much I like the writing, if they do that, I just get tired of the series. So I want Maddie to grow, and I will continue to grow her for as long as I can write these books.
Well, that's good. Well,
And just
you got a ways to go. I know that for sure. You got a new contract. That leads beautifully into my fourth question. What motivates your main character? She's motivated, and what do you think the aspects of her personality are that make her a good amateur sleuth? First fill us in about who she is, what she's like, what her deal is, and then tell us why she would be doing these things.
All right, so Maddie is a girl who's kind of used to having everything easy. She's pretty, she's smart. Her dad has, a fair amount of money, not rich or anything, but can get her out of trouble if she gets in trouble. So she's used to just everything going her way, and she gets to England, and England has different English than America, and that's kind of the first thing she realizes is that she's a little bit of a fish out of water, and it's not normal for her. And so she's having to kind of like prove herself over and over again, which is something that she wasn't used to. So she's 19, and that's a big part of it is just people aren't just going to accept me because of who I've always been. I'm going to need to show them that I am all these things. And so that's kind of her, fish out of water without realizing that she was, ever gonna have to deal with that. And then she's 19, and night. Have you ever seen the movie Inside Out? With all the different little emotions in the head, and when a girl is 10, all those things start to break down and they rebuild. Well, they happen again when a girl is 19. For boys, it's 22 and 26. Everyone at 10, girls 19, boys 22 and 26. And a lot of 19-year-olds are just in turmoil because they don't realize that their entire brain is remapping. And as I said, I'm a professor, so I work with these students who are going through this, and it's a really pivotal point in their lives. And a lot of times you'll hear people say, oh, 19-year-olds are crazy. And it's because their brains are remapping. And so it kind of makes 19-year-olds both incredibly intelligent and incredibly dumb at the same time. And and I just really enjoy playing with that kind of character. And again, she is in this entirely new situation, so she has a lot to prove. And what motivates her as a sleuth is not really the, need to find out or butt in, but the need to protect herself and make sure that she's not going to be next. And that little bit of paranoia kind of makes her more of a target than less of one.
Exactly. But it's interesting that you have such a young sleuth for an adult. It's an adult book. I mean, it's not a kid's book, but it's you have a very unique sleuth in that aspect, because typical traditionals are they're in their 30s or they're in their 60s. There's not a lot of 19-year-old amateur sleuths unless it's Nancy Drew. But you're right, it's a terrible time because you're like, I know everything, and yet you have no
I
clue.
love it. Adult
It
thing
makes
is
it
hard.
I remember being like, oh man, I look back, I'm like, geez, and I've survived. Because it is like a chastity belt, like for your brain for big decisions. You shouldn't be making any kind of decisions.
It's like, no, that's a bad idea, bad idea, bad idea.
No, that is not a good thing to be pursuing at this time. And I just always go, well, good luck when I see young people like, I'm gonna do this thing. I'm like, okay, well, I hope you're one of the one in a million that will work out for. But it's a weird time in life. And but flip side, you know, an older generation's like, we could go fight in a war, couldn't drink, should go fight in a war. So that's interesting too. It's like, I don't know. I don't think we're done until we're 30. I think we're baked at 30. I didn't start making big decisions until I was 30. I was like, oh, okay.
Some people when they're 30. I know some who are more like 35.
Yes, I agree. I agree. It depends on how hot the oven was.
Exactly.
It takes a while for some people, but at age 19, that's a kid.
that's a given.
I mean, I got a 13-year-old and I can't imagine him in 6 years buying a house or something. I'd be like, no. Okay. All parenting advice aside. So fifth question. What advice would you give to a writer who is just starting out right now? You're a professor. You're really, really smart. You're very academic minded. You're a writer. You're a beautiful writer. Someone sitting down today to the first day, what would you give? What advice would you give them?
Don't give up. Don't give up. I wrote my first novel and then I just kind of like put that in a drawer. And then like 18 years later, I wrote the second novel. And then I started going to conferences. Conferences are key. Absolutely 100% must go to conferences, craft conferences like Writer's Digest, but then also fan conferences. Like I learned so much at Malice Domestic. And I would go back and rewrite something and go back and rewrite something. Every time I learned something new from one of these conferences or one of these sessions, listening to my favorite authors, I would go back and rewrite it. And I finally realized I was Frankensteining this poor thing just into oblivion. And so I put it aside, but I did not give up. I started on Death Takes a Bath, which is the first in the series. And just implemented everything that I had learned. And it came out so much better. And also you have to remember editing is a part of the process and you're not gonna wanna and you gotta. And you know, sometimes you'll get, the first short story I turned in, I edited it multiple times. I gave it to beta readers. I teach writing. And I turned it in and got all the first edits back and like every single line had something. And I was just like, ooh. But then I learned so much from that. And the next time I gave it to her and she just like had like two lines. I'm like, did she not read it? Did she not have more advice for me? So, just every step is hard. And so rewarding, and just never give up. Keep doing it, keep doing it, keep doing it, and it will someday pay off and be wonderful.
Absolutely, absolutely, that is correct. Very good. All right, we have a 5-question quiz at the end. It's a pop quiz. You have to take it. You're a teacher. You know, you do this to other people. So now you get to be. Now you're quizzed.
I don't use quizzes because you never use them in real life.
Only in the movies and on my podcast.
And on your podcast.
Every 80s movie had one in it. Okay. Number one, do you prefer reading standalone novels or series?
Series.
Okay, cool. You're the third episode of the year and the first one to say series. So that's good. You're going to break the trends already. I had the quiz in the beginning. I change it every year. And then I wasn't doing it for a while. And now I have a revitalized quiz. Number two, do you prefer reading books set in contemporary times or historical?
I'm going to say contemporary. I do like a historical novel, but sometimes the authors let the history take over the story, and I'd rather indulge in the story.
Exactly. I hear you. Yeah. Done well, everything's great, but you know, whatever you would prefer on a stranded island somewhere. Okay. Do you prefer to write in the mornings or the evenings?
Mornings. I'm smarter in the mornings. as the day progresses, I just get dumber and dumber. So I like to get everything done in the morning.
Yeah. I'm a little tipsier in the evening too for me. That last time at dinner, I'm like, I'm not going to be doing anything after this. All right. Would you rather watch a movie or a TV show?
For a long time, it would have been movie. Because movies were produced better. They had better cinematography, better writing, all of that. However, with the advent of like cable television and maybe having like an eight series or eight episode series, those have been fantastic for television. It's like 24 episodes in a year is too much for anybody, but like Shetland has what, three, four episodes. They're brilliant, all of them. So per season. So I'm gonna say a well-crafted TV show.
Yep, you're on trend so far too. We're all in agreement that TV has gone through a renaissance. I just saw something on the news this morning that's The Sopranos turned 25, and I think that's sort of like when it sort of was ushered in. HBO sort of ushered in a lot of this stuff, and now it's like we're
Now
spoiled
it's
for choice. We are spoiled for
everywhere.
choice. Yeah.
I do still go to the movies like every week, though.
Yeah, I love movies too. But I was saying to somebody else, I go on and I look, and I'm like, there's nothing here I would like to see right now. But I mean, there's a lot of stuff that's coming out on streamers that's good, but it's a movie, but it's just not in the theater. I do love a movie theater too. We just got one of those cool ones that have like bar and, recliner chairs
They're fun.
right by my house. Yay. Number five, if you could have dinner with any author, living or dead, who would it be?
Rhys Bowen.
Cool.
I love Rhys Bowen, and I love her Royal Spina series, and she just, I've seen her at conferences, of course, and she just seems like a delightful person. So yeah, I would living, I would take her. Dead, I would take Agatha Christie. Yeah, for pretty much the same reasons.
They're both, well, I assume Agatha Christie was a fun dinner companion, but Reese is definitely, I can tell you that she's very lovely to have dinner with and drinks. I've had drinks with her and her husband out in California one time I was up there in Long Beach. But yes, that's a good choice. Good choice. Good set of choices. Well, all right. Well, thanks for coming on the podcast. What's going on? What's next? What's the next? What are you working on? And are you going on tour? What's happening?
I've got Death Takes a Fall, kind of launched at this point, and paperbacks are available, audio is available, and of course ebooks are also available, and it is getting some good reviews already, so that's very exciting. I am about 25% of the way through the next Maddie book, which is Death Plays with Fire, and will take place at the Chedworth Roman Villa in the Cotswolds. It's outside of Gloucester. It is the best preserved Roman villa in England, and she's going to have some trouble with druids, which is very confusing because the druids were gone by the time the villa was built. So she's actually really annoyed about the inconsistency.
Neo druids, is that what we're doing? Neo.
And then I have another series that I hope will see the light of day at some point.
Yes, I think there might be a good thought for that one too. Great. Okay, well, thanks for coming on the show. It's always a pleasure to see you. I saw you out in California and that was fun to chat with you for a few minutes, but it is nice to connect here and we'll have you back on every year when you get a new book.
Awesome. Thanks so
All
much,
right.
Sean.
Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.